Hi, and welcome to today's meeting of Book Hoarders Anonymous. Let's all begin by introducing ourselves.
Hi, I'm Shannon, and I'm a book hoarder.
Hi, Shannon.
Hi, I'm Erin, and I'm a book hoarder.
Hi, Erin.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to Book Hoarders Anonymous, episode 44.
Woohoo!
Yay! I'm Erin.
And I'm Shannon.
And we're here to talk about all things book, you know, like we always do, and give you some strange and interesting book news and talk about the book we read and our next book, and you all know the drill.
Yeah.
Our homework this time was Almayer's Folly by Joseph Conrad. I about said Joseph Campbell. That's wrong.
No, that would have been a much different book.
Yeah, definitely. In our sort of like tribute to the classics of the world. And we'll talk about that in a little while. But first of all, why don't we talk about what books we've read this month? We'll also talk about, you know, questions and answers and all that kind of stuff too. But let's questions and answers. What am I talking about? The question we asked last month was also,
yes,
do you join book clubs? And if so, why or why not? And we did have an answer to that. So we'll reveal that later along with our next question. Right now, let's talk about what we read. What did you read last month?
Well, I've been reading a lot of really good things. I was feeling like I had a bit of a reading slump toward the end of last month, and so I tried to spend all of September reading things I liked, and I mostly succeeded on that front. My favorite thing I read was a book called The Compass Rose by Gail Dayton, which I got from Bookshare. I feel like maybe I should tell people that, be better about that, so. I'm going to try. and it was about, it was a fantasy novel with a strong romance element. I wouldn't say it was like, it was more fantasy than romance, I thought. Basically, there's this woman who is the general in this army that's being invaded by the people from another kingdom, and she prays to her gods, and she's like, look, we're gonna be slaughtered. Whatever I can do to keep that from happening, let me do it. And the gods are like, okay. And they give her a bunch of powers, and she slaughters the army. And then, of course, with great power comes great responsibility, and she suddenly finds that she is connected to all these strange people, some of whom are from the enemy culture that she, the people that were invading. So that's awkward. And it's, they end up, the society that she lives in is kind of polyamorous. So they, like, each family is composed of, like, as little as 4 people and as many as 12. And they all just kind of, it's very definitely a, like, not so much all completely a sexual thing as just, like, you know, you have a bunch of people that are there to support you in good times and in bad. And, you know, so they, like, she ends up drawing these people to her that become part of her family. And it was really good world building, and the characters were great, and I really loved it.
The second
book is also on Bookshare, but the third book I had to buy it on Kindle because it was not.
Oh, so you read all 3 books in the series
I haven't read all 3 books. I read the first one, and the second one I'm probably going to start it next week.
That sounds awesome.
Yeah, it was fun. And then, let's see, I read a book I bought on Kindle called Night Whispers by Alicia Rye. And that was fun because it was a romance novel set in kind of a post-apocalyptic landscape where the government is kind of hidden underground and there are zombies. And I liked the premise because the premise is that the heroine is like goes out into the like, you know, out of the safety net and goes to find people and bring them back to safety, you know, the survivors from the
zombie apocalypse.
And she's got this handler who is, you know, he's never met her, but she, but he, you know, gives her guidance and you know, checks up on, in on her. And he's kind of this reclusive, like, analyst type guy that, that's, like, never left the underground facility where the government's kind of moved to. And they've never met. And then all of a sudden she goes missing. So he has to go leave. Like, he's been kind of a hermit. And now he's got to leave the safety of, like, the underground bunker and go after her. And it was really, like, it was a pretty taut thriller kind of a romance. I mean, it was definitely a romance, but there were times that I was like, are you sure these people are going to be okay?
Like, right.
There was lots of violence and kidnappings and things like that. I wouldn't say it was particularly dark, but it was definitely not a book that you would read if you didn't want to read any violence at all.
Gotcha.
And I read, I don't know if I talked about this last month. I don't think I did. I read Being Mortal by Atul Gawande.
I don't think you did.
Which, I did talk about that.
I don't think you did.
Oh, okay. Oh, I didn't. Okay. I should write these down. It's nonfiction. I read that on Bard, and my book club is going to be reading it for in October, and so I was like, oh, I'll be, like, totally ahead of the curve. It's a book about how we react to how we treat people that are dying. And in essence, the, his thesis is that we don't do a very good job with it. He talks about how, like a lot of times the whole narrative around illness is like, oh, we got to keep fighting. We got to keep fighting. Mm-hmm. And then sometimes we fight so much that, like, you know, any quality of life that people are going to have, you know, like, well, they can't have it anymore because they're too busy taking all the medicines for treatments that are, that might not necessarily work. And so, and then he talks a little bit about, like, elder care and nursing homes and how, like, a lot of them are just, like, they weren't designed with elders in mind. It was kind of like, you know, it was, they were originally offshoots of hospitals, and, you know, the hospitals were like, you know, here we have all these chronic patients and we don't know what to do with them.
Right.
So, you know, we'll put them in these facilities where they can have, you know, round the clock nursing care, but no real sense of, like, autonomy and being independent or having any purpose in life beyond just kind of being left there to molder and die.
Right.
And, you know, so he's talking about how, like, there are places that are trying to change that. And so I thought it was really, really neat. I was a little skeptical at first because, you know, I'm in my 30s. I'm not going to die anytime soon, hopefully.
Right.
And my book club is composed of a lot of people that are much older than me. It seemed like they would probably find it a lot more interesting than I would. But then I just kept reading, and it was just, it was, he has a very engaging writing style. And, it was, you know, it's definitely one of those books I started out reading and feeling like I was, like, you know, like, oh, I'm just going to get through this. And then I was surprised at how much I wanted to keep reading it.
Wow, that's awesome.
So, yeah, Being Mortal, it's on Bard. Definitely recommend it.
Any others that you'd like to mention?
I think those are the highlights pretty much for the month. I read a lot of good stuff, but that's pretty much the...
The three best.
The three that I liked.
Okay. Let's see. What did I read this month? I read a lot of good things, but towards the end of the month. I was kind of going through a reading slump for the first couple weeks of September. And then I read a couple of really dark books. One of which was, well, this one wasn't particularly dark. It was kind of sad. It was called Dancing on the Edge by Han Nolan, I guess a woman. And it's about a girl who lives in Alabama or some backwoods southern town in Alabama, I think it was. She is living with her grandmother and her father. Her father leaves. He's like this writer prodigy, and he wrote, I guess, his one and only novel at the age of 15, and then he didn't write anything else after that. So when our protagonist is 10 years old, father runs away. Grandma tells her that he melted because grandma is crazy. And she ends up kind of like believing that because she's 10. She's kind of, you know, she's still right. growing and she doesn't understand. And grandma stages to see the scene to look like he just vanished out of his clothing and, you know, all this. So grandma is kind of like really manipulative and high functioning, but also she starts to believe the things that she makes up. And so she's kind of crazy. Our protagonist, whose name I forget, incidentally, I'm sorry, protagonist, goes along with what her grandmother is telling her and lives by these really crazy, wacky rules because her grandmother is like pretends to be a medium and a tarot card reader. And she's basically a con artist who believes in her own cons. Mm-hmm. And so when the girl in the book is 13 or 14, she succumbs to her family history of illness of depression and tries to prove that she's real because she's like, is this real life? This is just, my life is so crazy and weird. I just can't believe it's real. She tries to prove to herself that she's real by setting a fire and seeing if she can feel the fire burning her. And she ends up getting severely burned and put in the hospital. Ends up being in a mental ward for patients. And it basically chronicles like from a teen's point of view and perspective, experiences in mental hospitals. And the reason that I enjoyed it was because they were talking about a mental facility for children in Atlanta. And I think, although they weren't saying the name, that it was very similar to one that I have experience with, not being in it, but a friend of mine was in the facility for a while with similar issues. She didn't burn herself with candles, but it wasn't nearly that dramatic. But for a few weeks, she went to get some high-powered counseling and things. And so I think they modeled the facility in the book, the author did, on this facility in Atlanta for teens. And I thought it was really interesting, and the book was very well done. The end of the, you know, she finds a counselor who helps her, and it ends up being very, very sort of positive book in the midst of all this, you know, deception and lies that her family is, very dysfunctional family, is surrounded with. And so the next book that I read, right off the heels of that sort of mixed blessing book, was one called The Singing Bone by Beth Hahn. This wasn't intentional, but it happened that way. And it's about, it's a book. The first one was from Bard. The second one was from Audible that I got. And this woman named Alice had an experience when she was in high school in the late 70s. The book jumps between the 70s and the 90s. She and several of her close friends were abducted and taken into this cult, for lack of a better word. It's sort of like free love, sex, and drugs were used to manipulate these teenagers into doing and committing these terrible crimes. Kind of like Charles Manson, but
like the Manson, yeah.
Like the Manson murders, but it was a little, yeah, it was a little like that. But they were also doing other stuff than murders. They were like conning people out of large sums of money, and they were doing a whole bunch of other stuff. And it ended up that some of the children, they were all children and they were all friends. Some of the children murdered all the members of this family that they had conned out of, I don't know how much money, but it was basically, it was alternating between her memories of life in that time versus what's going on in this time, which it's 20 years later. And the con artist has been in prison for 20 years, Jack Wick, and Jack Wick is up for parole. And you know what happens? When he's basically, it takes you up through when he's released from prison, because he actually didn't do the murders. It was the other kids, the right. kids who did the murders, you know, and he was convicted of fraud and conspiracy to commit murder and all this other stuff. And there's a film documentary writer who's making a documentary of this whole time. And so Alice is telling him about her memories there, and he's chronicling this sociopath who's in prison who, you know, taught these kids to do all this horrible stuff. And I'm not explaining it very well, but it was really well written and really creepy. And it was definitely, Definitely worth reading if you like that sort of like inner, you know, scandal things, like people playing on other people's motivations and changing their personalities and stuff. It was really cool. There's a lot of sex and drugs in it, though. So if that stuff offends you, I wouldn't go there, you know, and punishments and, you know, things like that. Not bondage and submission or anything like that, but like punishments for doing things wrong. You know, you get put in the crawl space and just weird stuff. Ooh. Taken out in the woods and told to kill someone, you know, just weird, crazy things. So it basically, Alice resolves her memories of that time and tries to put them behind her. And it's just her efforts to do that. And she gets a little bit, goes a little bit batty in 1999 because she's been reliving all this stuff. And all of a sudden now she's having to, you know, live it again. And just her efforts to deal with that. It was very good though. It was very heartwarming. It ended well, or as well as something like that could end, I suppose, considering the fact that, you know, it was a very sort of traumatic experience for everyone involved. So the last book, I felt like I needed something seriously fun to take the edge off of those two books. Again, this was from Audible. And this is a book by Chloe Neal, who I understand has written a series called Chicago Vampires that's kind of popular, but I've never read it. This book, though, is... I don't know what the series is called, but the book itself, the first one in the series, is called The Veil, V-A-L-E, I think. And basically what happens is there's a veil, V-E-I-L, I guess it would be, because there's a veil between our world and the world of, you know, the beyond, the world of the fairies and other supernatural beings. And somehow it was torn and they got, you know, into our world and there was this huge war. And now we're dealing with the after effects of the war. So it's kind of like a post-apocalyptic urban fantasy kind of deal.
Okay.
And humans aren't supposed to have magic, but it kind of leaked through, and some humans were more sensitive to it than others. And now they can use magic, but they're scared that they're going to, if they people figure out they're using magic, that they're going to lock them up into the paranormal concentration camp, essentially, where all the paranormals have been confined. Because, you know, people are afraid of them. So they, you know, they confine them. They tell them they can't use magic. If they use magic, they're tortured and punished. All this kind of really cruel thing stuff because humanity won, but at a cost. So it takes place in New Orleans, which for some reason, I guess it was written in 2015 and it takes place there for some reason. That's where the veil is. And so Claire discovers that she's a sensitive. And this book is sort of like a thriller romance type thing, like you were describing before. But it's really, really super fun. And there's a lot of violence and action that goes on all the time throughout the book. And you're kind of like, oh, my God, are these people going to live type of thing? Kind of like you were talking about with your book. But she falls in love basically with a bounty hunter who is sent out to hunt wraiths, which are what humans become when they're magic. What the sensitives become when their magic just goes crazy and ends up eating them alive. And they're like little skeletal beings who hunger for anything that has magic in it and will feed on and kill anything in order to get magic, kind of like a vampire in a way. And so he's trying to convince her that even though she's a sensitive, she can get it under control and won't turn into a wraith. And they're trying to convince the government that the wraiths are acting intelligently for some reason. And they were thought to be pretty stupid. And now they're noticing that they're acting more cooperatively together. And initially, the government doesn't want to hear it. But then there's this big scandal. And it turns out somebody's trying to open the veil again. And deliberately recruiting sensitives to try and do this and turning them into wraiths when they can't succeed. So that's what the book is about. Figuring out who's opening it and trying to get it closed. And eventually, you know, they succeed. But... it starts, and I mean, this is the start of a series, so there is a second book. And those are all the books that I think I want to discuss. I read some really good nonfiction this month, I have to say, and some other fun stuff, but those are the three that I thought I would discuss here. Why don't we go for our question, just for fun? to break it up a little bit. The question was, why are you in a book club and why or why not? And Kathy responded, she doesn't belong to any books clubs. She sometimes wished that she did, but other times she's grateful she doesn't. There are no book clubs close to where I live, and that's the big thing, and that's, like she says, the main reason. In order to enjoy the experience of discussing a book with my peers, my brother and cousin and I will pick a book and read it at the same time and then give our opinions via email. There are only three of us in our club, and we still encounter problems. My brother is more into nonfiction and enjoys books on the presidents, finance, and sports, as well as biographies and rock stars, especially those from the 60s and 70s. Another problem that almost ended our group was my cousin felt insulted when she did not get the same interpretation from a book that my brother and I got and thought it was obvious. But cousin took it personally when they came up with another interpretation. She does miss having someone discuss and share a read with. There's nothing more disappointing than to read a good story and want to talk about it, and there's nobody there.
Yep.
So I can understand that. There are a couple of people in our book club in my book club, that suck the joy right out of a book, because this one woman is an English professor. And so, first of all, she'll choose books for a group that are really literary and, like, okay. But then when we go, she has these really convoluted interpretations of the book. And I'm just kind of like, yeah, I like the book. I like these characters. I thought they were very well drawn. And then that's where I end. And then she goes, well, what did it symbolize? And didn't you enjoy the foreshadowing in chapter 3? And I'm just like, whew, the times when she doesn't come to the book clubs are really, like, nice for me. And I shouldn't say that because the poor woman has MS and it's really hard for her to get around and do anything and go anywhere. So it's wonderful that she does come. I'm not saying it's not great that she shows up, but I get a little bit overwhelmed with her. You know what? I'm not an English professor. And I was in a group, a book club a long time ago, and most of the other people were English teachers at this local university. And number one, they talked shop all the time, and that really sucked the joy out. But also, everyone talked about all these freaky, like, symbology and shadowing and foreshadowing, and I'm just like, you know what? I don't know. This isn't for me. So I left that group. But I think that book clubs are fun to get together socially and just have a lighthearted discussion about a book and talk about it and find out what things, you know, moved you about the book and spoke to you and what things did not. So for that reason, I'll probably stick with my book club, neighborhood book club.
I feel the same way about mine. My story is that there's a woman who comes to our meetings who is notoriously curmudgeonly, which is not a problem because, I mean, have you heard this podcast? I feel like sometimes that's me.
Yeah. Well, you know, but, both of us.
But she will read things and then it will be like, well, you know, that wasn't my experience, you know, and often this happens with fiction and, you know, it's like, well, lady, it's fiction. Of course, it's not going to be the way that the real world actually works. And so there have been times that like, it's really surprised me when she said that she liked something.
Right.
Like, you do? Oh, my
goodness. Really? I wouldn't have thought that. Yeah, I get that.
But, yeah, so I think that's a really good point about, you know, if you're in a small group like that, that, you know, you get the one person who saw things differently. Whereas it, you know, the book club I attend, there are, you know, like 10 to 15 of us every time. So it's a less easy for that kind of stuff to come up.
Right.
We always have a pretty good variety of viewpoints.
Yeah. And I think the smaller the group, the harder it is for you to maintain the group. We're a pretty large group. And so it's like, we can have as many as 15 people and as few as 5, and we're still okay, you know, show up and we're still, you know, we're still okay. for a meeting. I think there's only been one meeting when nobody showed up or nobody responded that they were coming, and so it was canceled. But yeah, that was Frankenstein, by the way. I read Frankenstein all over again, story. And then, yeah, I did, and then nobody came.
Nobody came.
Yep. Oh, well. Our question for next time is posed by Shannon, and this was an awesome question.
And my question is, if you're sick, do you read while you're sick, and is that, do you read things that are, like, what are your comfort books? I guess that's the best way to put that, for when you're not feeling well.
Physically or mentally, because sometimes you can enjoy your comfort books when you're really down. I know I did that last month. I went and spent my Audible credit on a book that I have loved ever since I was in eighth grade. And who cares if it's for Audible kids? I wanted it. Comfort reads, you know, after reading something really dark, you want a comfort read. Life's not going so well. You're really depressed. You want a comfort read. It's raining. You want a comfort read?
You're
sick, and it doesn't have to be sickness. It can just be, you know, sickness, sadness, anything like that. What are your comfort reads? That's a wonderful way to put that.
I have several books that I have, like, on my SD card for, like, saved up against a day when I'm not feeling well. Mm-hmm. I read the first of the Mitford books by Jan Caron when I wasn't feeling well. And I think that's pretty much the right state to be reading those books in, because they're just, like, nice, and they're comforting, and nothing bad happens to anybody, and they're, like, they're it's the equivalent of curling up with a blanket and a nice cup of chicken soup.
Awesome.
And I think that because often when I'm sick, particularly, which was what I was thinking of, like, I don't want to read anything that's going to make me work that hard.
Right.
You know, I don't want bad things to happen to the characters. Well, I mean, conflict is a thing that happens in every book. So.
Right. But really bad conflict.
I want it to all be okay at the end. And, you know, and sometimes not a whole lot of, like, emotional ups and downs, and, you know, or sometimes for me also the thing I will do is, if I'm not feeling like I can focus on anything new to me, I will go find a book that I loved and read it and have read before.
I do that too. I have on my SD card permanently there the Complete Chronicles of Narnia by C.S. Lewis. They're read by Eric Sandvold, which, but, you know, it's the Bard versions, because they're all in one big book. And so when I'm sick, I can just turn it on, or not feeling well, or don't want to focus on anything new, I can turn that on and just let it go. Because I love those books. They're so, you know, they got this impossible quest, and these kids have to figure it out. And it always turns out right in the end. And they're so sweet, and they're so creative and wonderful.
What would you guys read?
If for a comfort book, let us know. And you can do that by emailing or tweeting us, and we'll let you know how to do that at the end of the show. Podcast, show, whatever this is. There's no good segue. We're just going to talk about the news.
Let's go to the news.
Yeah. There's a company called SpaceX. And its CEO is Elon Musk. Shouldn't that be Jovan Musk? No. Anyway, so Elon Musk is trying to get people to go to Mars. And so he's building a ship to take human colonists to Mars by, what did he say, 2024 or something like that. The ship is going to be called Heart of Gold. And all of you know where that comes from, Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, the probability ship, the probability drive ship is called Heart of Gold, and it can go anywhere in the universe based on probability. It's Douglas Adams, so, you know. But I thought that was kind of cool. So that's what it's going to be called, Heart of Gold. And so there are some sort of whimsical articles that we found in here, about older women enjoying reading racy novels because they don't get enough, apparently, in real life. The Stephen King influencing popular culture. One of the writers who's influenced popular culture the most is Stephen King, and the ways in which he did that. Those are kind of whimsical. So passing over those, and you can find them in the show notes. The Game of Thrones books are getting digitally enhanced special editions. There are 13 episodes left in the HBO series, which they may stretch out into two seasons, knowing HBO, I'm not sure. And there are two books left in the series. But the first five books of the Game of Thrones series are being redone. The first one should be available probably around December, I think they said. And it's going... No, the first one's available now. All the books, if you want to buy their digitally enhanced versions, you will have to do so in Apple iBooks because that's where they're sold. The first one's available now for $8.99. Whew. And apparently it has all kinds of new perks like glossaries, house, family trees, and alliances mapped out, and all kinds of other things, appendices of information about the world in Song of Ice and Fire that people really addicted to the books might want. I don't know that I really care that much.
No, I don't think I do either. I feel like it's a bit of a cash grab. Like, well, yeah, you know, still relevant, guys.
Yeah, absolutely. I know. I just, you know, see, I still, people should still read the books, even though the series is out. So, because some people are saying, well, why read the books if you can watch the show on HBO? Ooh, poem not intended there.
Well.
But, you know, I'm kind of like, well, it's really different, first of all. There are some things that happen very differently. And second of all, you know, the books came out first, and the show is basically his reimagining of the books. And to some extent, ironing out some imperfections that the books had and making things a little bit more involved. And I just don't care that much. I'd rather read the books and get them, because that's the Game of Thrones world that I know. You know, I'm not real sure I'm comfortable in the other one. So, yeah, I agree. It's kind of like, well, the books are still around. Here, have these new ones. We'll make the world easier for you to understand. Because that was some people's problem, too. There were, like, so many people. I had a law professor that's how I found out about this series. He was lending me the books. And he was like, I don't know if I want to read the next books. There are so many people in this series. He had gotten, I think, through the first one. He bought the next two and hadn't read them. And he was like, I don't know if I want to continue. You know, I just can't deal with all these people. And I read them and urged him to continue, but I'm not sure if he did or not. But anyways, yeah, so it's definitely a moneymaker. I'm not sure how well they will end up selling, but we'll see. We'll see. The author of the article urges you to grab the books, the digital versions, because your own hard copy or paperback versions are probably falling apart. So my guess is these are going to appeal more towards the, you know, fanatics who reread and reread and reread the books rather than the individual just starting out for the first time.
Although that said, $8.99 for an ebook is not not the worst price I've ever seen.
No, I mean, you can buy the whole thing for less than $45. Not much less than $45, but a little bit, a few cents less, maybe. And, you know, we'll see how it goes and if folks buy them. That's not the worst price. I've bought Kindle books for more than that when I felt it was merited. So, you know, we'll see. Meanwhile, Dan Brown is registered to release a new thriller coming out in the fall of 2017 called Origin, and it's going to have all the things that make his books popular anyway. Most authors stick to their formula if it works. Religion and conspiracy and government involvement and thriller and all that stuff is apparently going to be in there. Origin makes me think it's going to talk about origins of humanity, but, you know, I really don't know.
Yeah, who knows?
Who knows? Penguin Random House, which has been around for a long time, is launching a website to cater to its science fiction and fantasy fans. It's called Unbound Worlds, and it's going to have on it links to authors' web pages, essays by your favorite Random House Penguin science fiction fantasy authors, interviews with the authors, just all kinds of extra content. They're not the only publisher to do that. I know that Kensington publisher in the UK is launching a science fiction fantasy website as well.
Tor.com is really famous for that.
And Tor, of course, has its own. It also has a monthly book club. Isn't that the one with the book club?
I think so.
I wanted to read one of the books, and then I didn't do it. You can join the Tor book club and get the book of the month for free, incidentally, that you're supposed to read. So they make it easy. So, you know, they're all doing it, and it's kind of like, does anyone ever go there? The author is kind of skeptical, and I am too. I'm kind of like, I'll go there for a look, and then,
Yeah, I think that Tor.com works the way it works as well as it does because it was one of the first. And so, and they also don't focus exclusively, I think, on Tor authors. It's just generally a good, and they have lots of like guest authors and contributors that aren't affiliated with the website in any way. So I think that helps keep it popular, but I don't know that all these other ones are they weren't there first.
They were there first, and we'll just have to see if they can keep their content fresh and find new and innovative ways to keep the site popular. And last but not least, Ursula K. Le Guin is one of only two or three living authors to have her work featured in the Great American Library. So kudos to Ursula K. Le Guin. She's a prolific writer who's written fiction, science fiction, fantasy, and other genres since the 1950s. And I think she's like in her 80s now. So she's, most of the authors in that library are dead. And I think, Philip Roth is in there. I can't get into his books. I'm sorry. I keep thinking about the Breast. It was one of his books, and it's about a man who finds himself turned into a breast. Just sort of sitting there on his bedroom floor as a breast. It was weird. Very, very, very
fascinating.
Weird. I hope it's not in the Great American Library. It was not good. But in any event, Ursula K. Le Guin is releasing some of her Orsinia works into the library. And these works were about a fictional country in Europe that she invented when she was a teenager called Orsinia. I haven't read those. They're not as well known as her science fiction works, but she kept writing about Orsinia throughout her career. And so it kind of spans her career in a sense. So I guess it's a good choice. With all that said, let's move
Speaking
on.
Speaking of another author that's not in the Great American Library, because I think he was Dutch.
No, he was Polish, but he was a British subject. Joseph Conrad wrote the book for our last month's homework. He wrote Almayer's Folly, which actually was his first novel. I didn't know that at the time that I, quote-unquote, signed the homework, chose the book. And we'll start by talking about it. What did you think about it?
I didn't like it. I didn't know how to soft-pedal that one. I thought that I struggled with it. It wasn't very long, but it was. Mm-mm. But I felt like it was very dated in a lot of ways that don't stand up very well. Like the fact that, like, some of the language that he uses to talk about the people in the Malay people is like super racist by today's standards. Mm-mm-mm. And at first I thought it was going to be like, just super racist in general, but then like Almayer doesn't really turn out to be all that great a guy anyway, so he's sort of just everybody is it's a book that didn't have anybody in it that I was particularly rooting for.
Me either.
And there were people that were in very tragic circumstances, but they acted in like, of course that all the women are going to be shrill and crying and weeping and the men are, if they're smart, but they're the local guys, they're cunning and, in their savage sort of way, that's how he puts it. And like, so that stuff just doesn't really translate very well. And I think that if the story had had a little more substance to it, like people still do read Art of Darkness and or Heart of Darkness, and like, you know, some of Conrad's other books, but this one is not one of the ones that I think I'd ever heard of until we decided to read it for this podcast.
And I picked it because it was like the second shortest one.
Yeah.
Or maybe the third shortest one. And so, you know, I picked it not because it was well known, but because I thought it was something that we all could probably get through. Because his writing is very dense and can be tedious, especially writing in that style. I didn't like it either. I felt like, you know, he was very, you know, like you said, super racist and super... you know, it basically highlights the whole like nature versus nurture controversy that was popular then, because Darwin was also popular. And so, you know, nature wins out according to the views of the time. And I wasn't really happy with the white men in the book, and I wasn't really happy with the savages in the book, as he would call them. The Malay people in the book, or the Arabs in the book, it was like they all acted according to their natures, and all human nature is bad. Yeah. You know, it's kind of like everyone's racist towards the other. No one trusts the other. And, you know, all the women are disappointed with their lot in life, and all the men never achieve what they want, and it makes them bitter and ugly towards everybody else.
Yeah. I kind of felt like the one character I did sympathize with, and I wasn't supposed to, was like Mrs. Almayer had a really fascinating story.
She did. I agree.
And like, she's just like, I just, as I watched her throughout the whole book, you know, just being this miserable crone wretch of a woman, I was like, well, I don't know, if I was raised on a pirate ship and then, you know, captured in the spoils of war by like some white guy, it's like, I'm going to be your daughter. You're going to be my daughter now.
I'm going to throw you in a convent for 4 years and forget about you and then just sort of marry you to this random white guy.
And then marry you to some like kind of shiftless, like shiftless dreamer that's not doing very much with his life. I'd be a little bitter and, you know, scolding, and
I'd be mean too.
Difficult to deal with too.
Yeah, I agree. I would too. Although I did really, the one thing that I did enjoy about the book as I was reading it, the one thing that kept me reading, I will say, was Conrad's ability to, it was written very sensually. I mean, you know, he described everything so well, and the descriptions in particular of nature and the way that nature, like the tropical foliage and the sunset and the river, I thought were very evocative. I could almost picture myself in the environment that he was creating. And I feel like that, for me, it didn't redeem the book by any means, but it kept me reading.
It helped. Yeah,
and it did help. And so I was very glad to read that. That said, I mean, spoiler alert, the ending is depressing. There's nothing. I mean, it's just, I just didn't enjoy it at all. And I have to say, most of the literature of the time was depressing. So he's kind of in with his contemporaries on that one. But I do think that... like, you know, the only thing that really lifted it up for me was the descriptions. But none of the characters I liked. And usually when I don't like any of the characters, I throw the book away. But, of course, I knew this was book hoarder's homework. It wasn't that long, so I felt like I could slog through it.
It was definitely a slog. I procrastinated a bit more than I intended to. And I was trying to finish it up this last week, and then I just kept being like, oh my God, I have another chapter of this. And I would try to read it on the way into work, and the writing would not keep me awake.
So, yeah, even sped up, it was hard to stay awake through that one.
Yeah, I ended up basically reading it all in one fell swoop the day before we recorded.
That's what I did too. because I, like you, had multiple attempts to start the book, and then I was like, you know what, I just have to finish it, just buckle down and do it. And so that's what I did. yesterday. I balanced it out by finishing something really fun yesterday. I finished that the veil that I talked about earlier. And then I was like, okay, I had my reward first. Now let's go and finish this up.
Yeah, yeah.
So, yeah, I think pretty much the consensus here was if we're not really thrilled with the book. But we can't like everything.
There's a reason that it was not one of Conrad's.
Yeah, not one of his better books. So next book, why don't you mention next what book? It is since you picked it?
Next book is, since we're in October and it's Halloween and that time of year, it's time to read another Stephen King book.
Dun, dun, dun.
I think we didn't do that last year, but now it's time to go back and, you know, keep that tradition going.
Absolutely.
So I picked, The Bazaar of Bad Dreams, which is a collection of short stories. I think it's his most recent collection of short stories.
I believe so.
Anyway, it's like three of Almayer's Folly because it's 18 hours, but they're short stories. So I figured that that's probably, you know, easy enough to dip in and out of as you are feeling inclined. And I guess some of them are old stories. Some of them are new and revised. So I don't know much more than that, but I'm excited.
Fun. I'm excited too. I'm really looking forward to this. And I'm going to be reading this at the same time that I'm reading my book club selection of 18 of the best short stories by Edgar Allan Poe.
So, nice.
Yeah, I know. My next month is just going to be full of the weird and insane writings of spookiness, yes. Which is fitting because it's Halloween. I'm very excited, actually. Very excited. And so we're going to, unless you've got anything else you want to talk about.
I think we're going to close it.
Yep, we're going to close it. Just to remind you, tell us what you thought about the books, or to give us answers to the question of what are your favorite comfort books, you can email Aaron. I'm sorry. Let me start that again. I feel like I'm doing the melting pot for some reason. we're going to wrap this up, but to your questions, comments, emails to answer our question about what are your most favorite comfort books, tell us what you thought about the books, all that stuff. You can email bhapodcast@gmail.com. You can leave a comment on our website at bhapodcast.com, or you can tweet at Book Hoarders via Twitter.
And if you want to contact either of us, you can tweet at me individually at Bardsong, or you can tweet at Erin Edgar. That's where she's at. The Melting Pot is Erin's internet radio show, which is on Sundays from 7 to 10 Eastern on Net Radio Group.
Yeah, 7 to 9, actually.
Oh, 7 to 9.
Well, you know, it used to be 7 to 10, so you're forgiven. and your blog, you still writing for that?
FlightIntoFantasy.com. I'm not writing as much as I would like, and I'm also occasionally found at goodbadandunread.com.
Awesome. So with that said, we will say goodbye and see you next time.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye.
To contact the Book Hoarders, send email to bhapodcast@gmail.com. Follow Book Hoarders on Twitter. Call us at 520-81-BOOKS, 520-812-6657. And visit the website at bhapodcast.com.